The light goes off again, and the door closes.
That didn't sound like a mouse to me, you know.
No.
Sounded more like a rat.
Oh, goodness, no.
The voices recede. Mario whips off his balaclava and sucks in lungfuls of air.
These nuns,
he pants.
In Italy, they are everywhere. Everywhere.
By the time he has calmed down sufficiently to carry on, their window of opportunity is starting to look decidedly narrow. Dinner hour is over at 8, and although the students will be continuing from there to study hall, the nuns, of whom it seems Mario has a pathological fear, which Ruprecht thinks is the kind of thing that ought really to have been mentioned prior to entering the convent, will be at liberty and on the loose. They exit the classroom and hurry along as directed by the map. Nerves are strained now, and the uncanny familiarity of their surroundings paradoxically disorientates them, leading them repeatedly down false paths.
That was the chemistry lab back there, so the gym must be this way.
No, because the lab was on the right, by the AV room.
No, it wasn't.
Yes, it was.
Just trust me, it's this way. Oh.
Oh, this is the gym, is it? This is the gym that they have disguised as a second identical AV room? And they play badminton with the televisions and hockey with the VCRs? Wow, they must be strong, these girls, to use heavy AV equipment instead of balls.
It starts to seem like the school itself is misdirecting them, reacting hostilely to their presence here. Either that, or the corridors simply don't link up in a linear way, don't actually correspond to the map, but instead are obeying some circuitous, rhizomatic feminine principle, the influence of the mound, maybe. And then, quite by accident, they find themselves in a recognizably older part of the school. Here there are holes in the wainscoting and crumbling walls. Even the light seems dimmer, greyer. They hasten along by dilapidated rooms stacked full of chairs, till they arrive at a pair of wooden doors. Very softly, Ruprecht twists the doorknob and peeks inside. Inside, there are climbing frames and mini soccer nets. The gym.
Meaning that this,
turning 180 degrees to the door across the corridor,
must be the locked room.
He can't keep the quaver out of his voice. The door, of course, is locked when they try it. Ruprecht sets down his equipment on the floor, produces the open sesame, trademark, skeleton key, and inserts it in the keyhole. After jiggling it around a moment, he tries the door again. It is still locked.
Hmm,
Ruprecht says, stroking his chin.
What's the matter?
Mario asks him. He does not like this corridor. Mechanical noises are emanating from somewhere, and a draft that seems unnaturally cold circles his ankles. Without replying, Ruprecht examines the teeth of the key and replaces it in the keyhole.
What is it?
Mario repeats, hopping from one foot to the other.
This is supposed to be able to open any conventional lock,
Ruprecht says, twisting it about.
It's not working.
I can't quite seem to get it to connect.
We don't have time for this. Try something else.
It has a guarantee,
Ruprecht points out.
Just use the drill and get it over with.
The drill will make noise.
It'll take 2 seconds with the drill.
All right, all right.
He looks at Mario expectantly.
What?
Well, give it to me then.
I thought you had it.
Why would I have it?
Because I don't have it.
The realization hits them simultaneously. Mario's shoulders slump.
I thought you said you planned this.
I did,
Ruprecht says humbly.
It's just that I made the plan before I knew what was going to happen.
It is then that they hear the voice. By its pitch, it is clearly a woman's, but any feminine softness has long desiccated away, replaced by an eldritch darkness, and attended by what sounds an awful lot like the snipping of spectral shears. For a moment, they remain frozen to the spot, and then, gurgles Ruprecht. Mario doesn't need telling twice. Scrambling his bag from the ground, he is set to scarper down the corridor when a hand fastens about his arm.
What are you doing?
hisses Ruprecht. Mario stares at him, nearly apoplectic with terror.
I'm running. It's coming from down there.
Ruprecht blinks back at him.
It's not. It's coming from up there.
They pause, almost but not quite clutching each other, with their ears cocked. The hideous, dried-out croak is drawing inevitably closer, apparently, whether by some quirk of the architecture, the type of stone in the masonry, perhaps, or the curious way the corridor bends, from both directions at once. The boys gibber at each other helplessly. With every passing instant now, the temperature drops precipitously. The grey light wanes. The ghastly voice chants its message, necrotic and Latin, over and again, as though doomed to repeat it, doomed for eternity, a doom that any second now they will be sharing. When the voice's owner comes around that corner, or the other corner, or possibly even both corners, to find them quaking before her. And then a hand, whose hand neither of them can remember afterwards, but a hand in desperation, reaches for the door, and this time, miraculously, it gives. Without a second thought, they hurry through it to crouch on its far side, ears pressed to the wood, as the voice outside, now accompanied by an ugly dragging noise, passes right by them, no more than a couple of inches away. They can't suppress a shudder, and then recedes, or rather ebbs, or rather actually dissipates. As soon as it's gone, they feel warmer, braver. Straightening up, they dust themselves off, scoffing at the idea that either of them thought for a second that whatever was outside was the ghost nun.
I don't even believe in this stupid ghost nun.
No, me neither.
It is the smell that returns them to their surroundings, like a finger tapping them on the shoulder. Potent and alien and deep, it suffuses the air to the point, it almost seems, of replacing it. As they inhale, they realize that it has been present in the atmosphere all along, too rarefied to notice until now. Whatever the mysterious feeling of difference is, this is the source, the Amphalos.
We, seem to be in the locked room,
Ruprecht says at last.
Yes.
There is silence. Silence and darkness. The dead walk. Futurity becomes a womb.
Okay, then,
Ruprecht says, with false bravado.
Let's get this show on the road.
He stumps with his pod into the shadows. Mario hastens after, following the clinking from Ruprecht's bag, trying not to think about the legends Niall's sister spoke of. And then he sees it. The blue corpse of a girl, suspended from the rafters, dangling there right in front of him. Luckily, he is too shocked to scream. And when he has steadied himself, he realizes that it is not a girl at all, only a school blouse, hanging there weightlessly in space. Ducking beneath it, he presses on. Even in the darkness, the room appears considerably larger than they expected. As their eyes adjust, they make several other unexpected discoveries. It is not, for instance, bare.
Show me that map again,
Ruprecht says. Bringing it right up to his face, he studies it carefully. This is unquestionably the place, and yet, instead of cobwebs and cracked floorboards, there are clothes horses, washing machines, jumbo-sized boxes of detergent.
More of a laundry than a classroom,
Ruprecht muses to himself. Perhaps an abandoned laundry. And yet, the tracksuit tops with the St. Bridget's crest, the skirts and jumpers, some damp, some dry, heaped in baskets or strung on crisscross lines, none of these looks especially old. He studies the map again.
You don't hear any music, do you? Like supernatural music.
Mario doesn't reply. With another, a kind of verbalized frown, Ruprecht forges on through the thick foliage of wet fabric. No evidence of a looming otherworld presents itself. Reaching the back of the room, his only new discovery is three huge sacks filled to the brim with girls' unmentionables, waiting to be washed. This puts the tin hat on it, as far as Ruprecht is concerned.
There's no mound in here,
he exclaims.
Just piles and piles of schoolgirls' underwear.
A sound from outside. Someone's coming. These voices are unambiguously modern, vital, somewhat raucous. The kind that might shout matily to one another over the judder of laundry.
We have to get out of here,
Ruprecht says.
Quick, the window!
He pries open the bolt and shoves up the sash, and is on the point of wriggling through when he realizes he is on his own.
Mario!
Team Condor's cinematographer and navigator is rooted to the spot, slack-mouthed and staring, as if in a trance.
Mario! What's wrong with you, Mario?
The voices outside stop abruptly, but still Mario does not respond. A huge, happy smile spreads slowly across his face, like the man who has found the back door to the promised land. Then, uttering a single, incomprehensible noise, like blir or meep, he breaks loose of Ruprecht and dives headlong into the pile of knickers. Skippy's back in his room. The others are still out on their operation. He makes it in here without talking to anyone. He knows what he has to do now. He doesn't want to waste any more time. He closes the door and switches off all the lights except for the lamp on his desk. He takes a blank sheet of paper from the stack in Ruprecht's printer and sits down. The goggles stare down from the door. The swimming trophy gleams with little fragments of remembering. Driving through Thurles on the creaky old bus, the day like elastic, stretched tighter and tighter, till the moment of the race when all of time snaps. In the bleachers, the blank space where Mum and Dad aren't. The green underwater hotel. The room where you can't sleep. The numbers. The countdown in gold to the door. Hurry, Skippy! Hurry! You have to do it now! It's like he can see the door opening again. Come on! Come on! Slowly opening, the streams of future wrapping around him and pulling him forward into it. No! He picks up his pen. He writes, Dear Coach. Ruprecht has not returned by lights out. The next morning, however, when Skippy opens his eyes, he is there, lying on the duvet in his underpants, staring at the ceiling as if it has done him some grievous wrong. How did your mission go? Skippy asks.
Not well.
Bits of what appear to be foliage litter his hair. Did you visit any higher dimensions?
No.
Did you find the mound?
No.
Skippy gets the feeling he isn't that eager to talk about it, and drops the subject. At breakfast, however, Dennis is less forbearing.
I don't understand,
he says with an expression of concern.
Didn't you follow the map?
Ruprecht, gazing blackly into his breakfast, says nothing.
Hmm. Maybe you should have asked one of the nuns,
Dennis remarks contemplatively.
Did you ask them, Ruprecht? Did you ask the nuns to show you their mound?
Ruprecht's eyes narrow, but he remains silent. Then the door opens and Mario enters the ref. Seeing Ruprecht at the table, he halts.
Oh,
he says, and hovers there, as if uncertain how to proceed. Still without speaking, Ruprecht gives him a long, hostile stare. Then he rises, leaving his meal half-eaten, and departs the room. Once he is gone, Mario is able to shed some light on Ruprecht's Stygian mood. It appears that after being sidetracked in some manner that Mario doesn't go into, the two of them were surprised in the St. Bridget's laundry room and narrowly escaped capture, only to spend 2 hours in a tree hiding from the janitor's dog. Odysseus, it turned out, was already in the tree following an earlier incident, and presented to the infirmary this morning with hypothermia and mauling.
No one actually saw you, though.
No, but we had to leave behind the pod.
Ruprecht's fury now becomes quite understandable. To have pan-dimensional travel in the palm of your hand, and then leave it in a girls' school laundry room.
Holy smoke, Mario. You don't think the nuns will work out how to use it and claim the Nobel Prize for themselves?
That's just the kind of thing they would do, those sneaky nuns.
Mario says bitterly. What were you doing in the laundry room anyway? Skippy asks.
Following the map. That's where it said the mound was.